NPR News, Islamabad.
A man described as mentally ill is under arrest following a shooting spree in northwest Washington state that left 6 people dead. Officials say the suspect, Isaac Zamora, turned himself in at a sheriff's office soon after the rampage. The Washington State Patrol says the violence began with the shooting of a sheriff's deputy near the town of Alger. Authorities say the gunman then led them in a car chase in which 2 construction workers and a motorist on Interstate 5 were shot and killed along with 2 other victims. 2 other people, a state trooper and motorcyclist, were wounded. Police say the suspect was released from jail recently after serving a 6-month drug possession sentence. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to improve the nation's foster care system to help children find safe permanent families at pewtrusts.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates. RE/MAX Realty Associates are full-time agents with an average of 13 years professional experience listing and selling homes. Information at 352-5700. RE/MAX encourages you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant. Homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, cards and gifts, as well as Wacky Nackies, Prairie Fire Glass, Be Active Toys, and Any Frequency Music, all housed on the same street in downtown Monticello.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also very pleased to welcome back to the show the man that we like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name. For a long time now, on the first Wednesday, he has stopped by, and we've talked about cooking and food and how it is that the food is something that it's not just about keeping you alive from one day to the next. It's much more important than that because it's always connected with family, and people associate particular dishes with particular days and times in their life. So people always like to talk about food, and we understood that a long time ago, and that's why we started doing these shows. We pick a particular topic and then encourage people to tell us stories, exchange recipes, and we always have a good time when he is here. And this time around, he said, well, let's focus on, and we do this often with the show, let's focus on the time in which we find ourselves here, time of the year, time of the season, when there's lots and lots of good, fresh produce available. Some people have gardens and they grow it themselves. Some folks, they go to the farmer's market where there's all kinds of great stuff provided by area growers. So we have all of those wonderful things that maybe through the dark winter you start thinking, boy, it'd be great to have some corn, great to have some really good tomatoes. It'd be great to have, a peach would be a nice thing. So now we have all those things.
I bought those yesterday.
Well, there you go. So now we have all those things. And Doyle was saying, well, maybe you have a good recipe and maybe it's something a little bit different. You know, there are certain things that are really easy and straightforward and you do all the time. But maybe you have something that's just a little bit different.
Or new.
Or new. Something you have just recently learned, come across, found in a magazine, in a cookbook. You know, whatever. So any and all that's is fine. It's pretty wide open. 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, and that's 800-222-9455. So we'd be happy to hear from you. Well, you know, one thing I wanted to mention here right at the beginning before I forget is to invite folks to tune in next Monday night. This is September 8th, 7 p.m., WILL-TV. We will be doing yet another live cooking show.
And that's not the royal we, it's us.
No, it's us. It's me and Mr. Moore here. We'll be doing the show. We did the first of these programs last December, and the theme was crockpots. And we had a great time. We encouraged people to send us recipes, and we made up a cookbook, which we then offered to send out. And we invited some folks to come down to the studio and to talk about and show us their recipe. We will be doing that again, and this time around, the theme is picnics, potlucks, and tailgates. It was sort of that. We said, well, okay, that's kind of that time of the year. People are still picnicking, and people are tailgating. And we invited people to send recipes, and we did, and we got a whole bunch of good recipes, and we have put together another book, and we have invited some people to come down to the studio and to stand there in front of the cameras and say, here's my recipe, here's how you do it, and here's what it looks like. And I'm sure that, once again, we will have a great time. So I really hope that as many folks as can will tune in watch the show. It's an event that's designed to support WILL, so that would be really nice too. But hope that you can, at the very least, tune in and watch the show. And it should be a good time. And this time around, and last time, all of the cooks, all of the people who appeared with us, it was all women. Now, this time we got some guys. We have some guys on this show. And in fact, we have a little boy who was so jazzed by the last program, he said he wanted to be on the show and he wanted to be the youngest cook. So this little guy, we're going to have to find something for him to stand on because he's not going to be able to see over the counter otherwise. So this is worth the price of admission just that alone. And he really wanted to be on with Doyle, so he's going to be on with Doyle. And so we're going to have a good time. So I really hope people can watch. So this is Monday, September 8th, 7 p.m., WILL TV. Okay, as I have been talking now for a long time, people say I talk too much. Well, I'll stop. So what have you been cooking lately?
Well, it isn't so much an absolute area, but I've come across some new recipes, things that I thought I knew, but they're variations and they come from. I find our cooking goes through some refinement, and it isn't just. Oh, the old thing, like the old thing, like the old thing. It's all of a sudden, oh, we could put this in it because we have that now. And we didn't have it then. And somebody has decided to put it in. And there's all kinds of influences of other cooking is coming in. And I find American cooking about as good as it can get. I mean, about as good as anywhere can get. And it's because there is so much influence and so many other things coming in. So I enjoy looking up and seeing who has paid attention to what's happening. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why I like it.
Well, if you got a recipe to share,
I do indeed.
Like to call and say,
I do indeed. In fact, the one that I sort of based this program on, I was surprised because I've talked about something very much like this, but. I've always talked about, often I have given a recipe for the white gazpacho, which was taught to me by a friend here in town, in the 60s. You know, that was when it first sort of popped out, the one with cucumber and sour cream or yogurt and things that were sort of Moroccan influences and things like that we had never tasted in this country too much. And of course, the gazpacho that I like that is from Spain and Mexico. Those are delicious. They're tomatoes. But I came up with a new one. I thought, is this the same old thing or not? No, it can't be because the list is too long. Except it sounds good. They call it. I mean, call it what you will. I've almost given up on names. So many names cross over, and so many things cross over and get funny names that are. Name is almost unimportant. It's called green gazpacho. Mm-hmm. And I have made it, and I found it exceedingly delicious. More than I expected it to be because it's got a lot of added good flavor. And I'm almost surprised, like, where does it come from? Well, I will tell it to you real fast. Two large cucumbers that you peel and quarter and seed them, scrape the seeds out with a spoon, and one large green bell pepper. And the recipe asks for 6 leaves of lettuce, and I felt that was unnecessary, so I left that out. And I, of course, you see, I have to mess with this anyway. And I put in a whole bunch of green onions. It asks for 2, and I put in 5. And a third of a cup, and of course I put in a full cup, of fresh cilantro leaves and 3 cups of buttermilk. And then a 4-ounce can of mild green chilies, the chopped green chilies, and lime juice. This is kind of a new, and 1 teaspoon of ground cumin. So all of a sudden, the cumin, the lime juice, and the hot peppers are all a new additive to this familiar connection. And flavor all over the place and very easy to make. And it lasts quite a while. I mean, that's 3 cups. That's almost a quart and a half of soup, and you aren't going to eat that much at once. It stays. I used it for, I think I had it for 4 days. Of course, I ate it every day too. And but it is so good. Cucumbers, bell pepper, scallions, and cilantro leaves, buttermilk, and green chilies, lime juice, and cumin. Then salt and pepper as you want it. Sounds like a real long list. Worth it. Worth every.
And there's no additional, other than the buttermilk, there's no liquid in this?
Nope.
So it's just kind of like a big chopped salad.
It's like a big, well, that's it. Most of the gazpachos I know use a beef broth or a chicken broth. Chicken broth and sour cream. And then I found some that did use a buttermilk, and that was kind of an interesting twist. But this one is only buttermilk for the liquid. Good, though. Put it all in the blender and or the Cuisinart and grind it up. And it has just, there's something about it. I was absolutely won over by this.
Well, I'm sure it's very healthy.
That too.
Very
you
healthy.
Know.
It's got almost no fat in it, and it's got all the vegetables. And of course, we're all supposed to be eating lots of good fresh vegetables.
Well, and all of these are the good ones too. You know, the pepper and cucumbers and onions, and the green chilies and the lime juice and the cumin.
I love cumin.
You know what?
That's a
that
good thing.
That I have I given really a lot cumin. Of. I think this also allowed me to think a lot about, you know. We're using cumin, and the guys on the TV channel, almost everyone is using cumin, a dash of cumin. And I thought, my gosh, that was only used in Indian cooking. You could only buy it in places that sold Indian foods, which for a long time didn't hardly exist except in Chicago. I'd drive up there to Devon Road and get Indian spices. Now we have them all over town. And it was used in Mexican cooking a lot because it's a real additive to chili, which you don't think about it until you put it in. And, oh, boy, that's the taste you're looking for.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it appears here and there and there and here. And it's always a very fresh, exciting taste. That's another real new adaptation that we've got into.
So is that's not a native New World plant, is it?
I don't think so, because I do think it's in Moroccan cooking as well, but not, I think that is like that, but that kind of comes from India.
So that, I guess that was what I was wondering, because I think of that as being very much a part of Mexican cooking and Southwest cooking. So I'm wondering, well, how did cumin come to this side of the ocean?
Well, it might have been Spain.
Oh, okay.
And indeed, it was India. So any of those influences that we would take, but I'm certainly aware that it is. A wonderful taste, and it's only, you know, how can I, if a recipe calls for something, I double it, you know. Well, I only put in the teaspoon, and it was just the right amount because it's just a hint. I like that very much.
All right. According to the font of all knowledge, Wikipedia, cumin is a flowering plant. It is native from the East Mediterranean to East India. So that is where it comes from, and I suppose if I spent some time here looking at it, it maybe would talk about how it is it got to the Americas. Well, anyway, I do think it's wonderful stuff.
I would still say Spain to Mexico.
All right. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to give us a call, contribute a recipe, say hi, whatever, 333-9455. That's here for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. It's the first Wednesday of the month, and for a long time, it's been our great pleasure to talk about cooking here with this guy we like to call our chef-in-residence, Doyle Moore. And he said, well, this is the time when we're getting lots and lots of good produce. Maybe you're a gardener and you grow your own, or maybe you go to the farmer's market and you get it that way. There's lots of good stuff, the kind of things we look forward to all year round. And so he is interested in, well, what do you do with that, particularly if it's something that's for you is new, something that you just came across, recipe you just found, someone gave it to you, it was in a magazine, it was in a cookbook, you saw it on TV, you know, whatever it was, and you got jazzed and you said, well, now this is definitely the time to make it. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I want to tell you that I don't have a lot of pastry experience. I've never been all that comfortable with pastry. But this summer, I have now twice made galette.
Oh, yes.
Or perhaps a tart. I like tarts. And so my wife comes home. She comes home with all these berries. She comes home with blueberries and blackberries, and she really loves blueberries. And so she came across this recipe for a berry tart in a magazine. And it's the kind where you roll out a crust, mm-hmm. you pile your fruit on it, mm-hmm. and then you just kind of crimp.
Flap them over.
Flap over yeah. the edges, and you bake it. That is really, really easy.
That is really easy.
And it was really good. I made two of them. We offered little pieces to people we really liked, but mostly we ate it all, which is kind of unusual for us. And it was so good, and it was really very simple. And now I feel like I feel a little less intimidated by pastry. At least this one, it's pretty.
Well, this
pretty the, hard to
that
proof it
that
out.
Is so that is so rustic that it's not the super idea of French pastries. It's very rustic. It's called get it done and have it. Strangely enough, so have I.
Really?
Of recent, yes. I have about three variations on that. One of them requires that the crust be baked, blind baked. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now that would be in a pie tin. You'd want that in a pie tin. And then chocolate was spread over it and melted and then allowed to cool. And then you put the berries on top of that and serve that. It was very quickly done. I had invited somebody for supper, and they said, oh, do you want me to bring something? I can bring a peach pie. Well, all right. And in 12 minutes, they showed up with a peach pie that they had just made because she had the crust in the ice box. Had been cool. So I thought, that's smart. Mm-hmm. But the other one is, now let's play your variation a couple of steps farther. Puff pastry. Get puff pastry, and now what you generally do for that is that you cut an inch and build up a wall.
Build a wall so the
build
stuff
a little bit
yeah.
of wall. Mm-hmm. That's another it's not mm-hmm. really a galette, but that's another very rustic kind of thing. Puff pastry is very good. Then someone is making a berry pie like you're describing, and in the bottom of the crust they cover it with cream cheese. And so there's a nice big soft mattress mm-hmm. of cream cheese on the bottom, mm-hmm. and then you take some of the berries. I'm remembering just last week there was a program. It really knocked me out because it said, well, you need seven cups of berries, and here they are. Well, they'd gone to the grocery, of course, and bought the Driscoll. Mm-hmm. Those little boogers are $3 a package, and they bought seven packages. I said, this pie, this clever little pie that you're making is $21 for just the fruit. And, you know, but I guess, well, it was beautiful. They got blackberries and raspberries and put them together. But they took two cups of those and pureed them up. And then thickened the puree with 3 tablespoons of starch.
Cornstarch.
And thickened that up and then put that in the bottom and then tossed the berries on top of that. So the berries were still loose. And they had it was a big pie, but all I could think about was not $21 worth of raspberries.
Well, this I was really really happy with the way these turned out. It was really quite easy, and it was good. And I did start thinking, well, what else could you do that with? What other kind of fruit could you do that with? Simply, you know, could you just do that same thing, say, with apples, peaches, pears?
If you did apples, my advice would be to saute the apples a little bit before you do it.
I wondered about that, and
you don't have to lay them out like a palmana it would just be there. Yeah, apples, but they take a longer time to cook, and you aren't going to spend that much time even baking it. Although some of the old apple recipes are the apples are put in. But for that open one, that open faced one, I think I would kind of do that, and I would put a little spices in them.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking a little sneaky thing you could do is cardamom. Just a little touch of cardamom, along with cinnamon, and a little touch of cardamom would make those apples really sing. And maybe even, of all things, maple syrup.
Hmm. Okay.
I've come across someone doing exactly that. It's one of my old classmates. And somebody, well, I didn't have this. I didn't have – so I put maple syrup and cardamom on it. Well, you won. You got a good combination there. It was really tasty.
All right.
So you never know where your influences come from.
All right. We've got a caller here. We'd be happy to hear from some other folks. It's the first Wednesday. Has been for a long time our great pleasure to talk about food and cooking with Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. We'll always pick some kind of topic, and then we talk about that. And, of course, there's no rules. We start one place, and we sort of meander. Who knows where it is we end up. And but we always have a good time. And this time you said, well, you know, we're at the time of the year where still we're getting a lot of great produce.
Yeah.
Every time my wife, she's the hero. She gets up and goes to the farmer's market. And every time she goes and she brings back lots of good corn and tomatoes and all sorts of stuff. And every time we're sitting there eating it, and we keep saying to ourselves, this could be the last. This could be the last. And so hopefully there's at least a little bit more before it comes to the point where it's then going to be squash and pumpkins and stuff like that.
It is September.
333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Caller from Downs in right here, toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm going to go on to Galette's.
Oh, please
good.
Do.
Your puff pastry?
Yes.
This is not really a galette, but
no.
if you roll out one sheet into a 12 by 12 square,
yes,
trim the edges so you get, you know, a nice clean cut for it to puff.
Yes.
Then cut the remaining into 6 rectangles.
Okay.
Okay. Bake the rectangles.
Oh, yes.
Then take a knife and just cut a little rectangle in the interior. You understand this?
Interior of what?
Of your puff
of
pastry.
Of the so big puff pastry, yes.
You're making a little hole.
Yes.
A big hole, actually.
Yes.
And you can just take a spoon or a knife and just tap that down, you know, the puff pastry.
It's an inlay.
Yeah, and you come out with this little case that took you no time to make at all.
Oh, wow.
And you can do whatever you want to with it. I mean, you can do something as easy as putting in whipped cream, topping with berries and a little more cream.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or pastry cream or lemon curd or, you know, on and on. Or just the berries.
Now, there you go, David. Those are the things you add to it. Lemon curd is something that I must admit I have never, ever tried to make because it always seemed to be one of the greatest mysteries in the world. And I don't buy it in a can already made, but lemon curd has always fascinated me. But I've been too. I'll have to give it a try.
Give it a try.
I will. That's inspiring.
But it just—I mean, people just ooh and ah over these little pastry cases.
Pastry cases. That's good.
And it's very simple.
You have to be careful when you're cutting puff pastry. And now, do you want to – I have to ask you this because I know you know the answer. Do you take the knife and just cut straight down? You don't drag the knife across.
Straight down, don't saw. Don't.
That's right. Don't saw and don't drag it over
right.
because that closes it up.
Right.
So you're cutting with a sharp blade right straight down. And if you do that, it will puff
right.
up on the
you
edges.
Need your, you need your biggest knife.
Yes.
So you don't have to drag it, and then you make a cut, and if that doesn't go through your whole space,
yeah.
then pick it up. Don't drag it.
Right.
On down. Pick it up and make the next.
In the same manner.
It's elongate
the like cut. A guillotine, cutting yeah. down rather than dragging across.
Absolutely.
I knew there was something like that, and I have tried to do that, and I have somehow, I'm always saying, gee, you were successful. It did work.
It usually works, but you can, I mean, no matter what you do, it usually works, but you can close off. you can kind of feel those.
That's what happens layers. if you drag the knife across and kind of chop chop chop, it doesn't work. But yeah, big guillotine. That's the thing to remember. That's good. Thank you very, very much.
And David, would you like a Swiss chard and zucchini filling?
Uh-oh.
For your galette?
Gee, I don't know.
Not a chard guy.
Okay. No, actually, I'm really not a chard guy, but I'd be happy to hear about it. Sure.
That's a sad thing.
Well, we all have our prejudices, I guess.
You want about 10, 12 stalks of Swiss chard.
Mm-hmm.
And you cut that off so you're separating the chard from the stems, but keep the stems.
Oh, keep the stems.
Keep the stems. It drives me crazy, these recipes that say throw the stems away or keep them for something else, and then they're sautéing onions. So why not cut up the stems and sauté them with the onions? So that's what I do. I take the leaves, chop them up, 1-2-inch squares, and then slice the stems. Set those aside. Chop a medium onion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Two large garlic cloves, minced or chopped.
Garlic.
3/4 teaspoon of salt.
Okay.
A teaspoon of fresh thyme or a half teaspoon of dried.
Thyme, yes.
3 large eggs beaten.
Oh.
1/2 cup of Gruyere cheese and 1/2 cup of skim milk.
And 1/2 cup of milk, okay.
And a little bit of olive oil.
Okay.
You saute the onion and the chard stems in the olive oil. I'm sorry, 2 medium-sized zucchini. I left out the zucchini.
Okay.
Chopped up.
Zucchini, yes.
You want to saute the onions and the chard stems, and then add the zucchini.
Okay, saute.
And 1 clove of garlic, and some of the salt, and cook those until they're the way you like them to be.
Okay.
Soft or crunchy or, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Dump those out, add the Swiss chard to the pan. And just cook it until it gets a little bit tender. This will take a little longer than spinach. It's a little sturdier than spinach, but shouldn't take very long. And add the second garlic clove at the end of that.
Okay, so it's two batches, yes.
Right. Then roll out your pastry. I forgot to say you need a recipe of pastry here. Roll out your pastry. I actually like to use a yeasted dough for this.
Oh, yes.
It works very well. But you can do it with a pie dough. Roll it out. Cool the cooked ingredients a little bit so you're not melting your pastry. Pile them in there and then do your little flopping over the edges thing.
Oh, yeah.
Then pour in as much of the eggs and make sure that that's really tight, that you don't have any little leaky places, any holes.
So you've really kind of made a pouch out of the pastry.
Right, and it doesn't need to close at the top.
Uh-huh.
You want it to get, and then pour in as much of the liquid as you can get in and top it with the cheese.
Oh, and top it with the cheese. So we got the eggs and the milk, and then you add, you sprinkle the cheese on top. Okay,
right.
Good, yes.
350 oven for 35 to 45 minutes.
45 minutes.
You can do this in a, in a quiche pan or something like that, too. It doesn't have to be a galette, but I often do it in a galette, and as I say, I often use a very thinly rolled yeast dough.
I've just learned how to make a quick yeast dough, and I'm really kind of surprised because I'm impatient. I'm very impatient, but I have found if you start, make the yeast dough, and you do let it sit for the 20 minutes that they want you to let it sit, then it's just about the right amount of time because I'm now ready to use it. I'm really impressed with a quick yeast dough.
Yeah, and if you start with the yeast in the flour and add pretty hot liquid,
yes,
that immediate rise.
It starts right away. And then it says, put it away for 20 minutes. And it and lo and behold, it. Oh, what I do is I light the turn on the oven to 300 for about 30 seconds, and then I pop the yeast the dough into that after I turn it off,
right.
and that's just enough heat that I will have it raised 2 to 3 times in about 20-25 minutes, and I'm ready to use it.
You know, there are all kinds of things about yeast dough that have bollocksed people up.
Well, yes, because the image I have is mother who spent 3 hours, you know, doing something before she could ever even start to bake.
And the very best bread.
Yes.
Takes a very long time to rise.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that you can't make really good stuff.
Good stuff. Well, what I was trying to make and have learned and didn't really know about is a pizza bianca.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's done exactly the same way. It's a yeast dough that you let set and rise a little bit, and then you flatten it out in a big pan. And one of them even dared to call it focaccia, but I'm not going to push it that far. I said, well, you can either use it. If you want to, you roll it out like a pizza dough, or you roll it out like focaccia. But then I found out that pizza bianca, which is just olive oil and rosemary and salt, I think, put on the top of the crust. So it's very quick.
Oh, no fresh mozzarella. Huh?
No, not the last 3 recipes I've read. No, it's not that. Hmm. It, that's why I say it looks like it's going to just be a focaccia.
Right. Well, David, try the Swiss chard.
Okay.
Good for you.
It's yummy stuff.
I'll take your word on that. Thanks very much for calling. We appreciate it. We're a little bit past midpoint here of this part of Focus. It's first Wednesday. It's always been our great pleasure to talk about food and cooking. And with this guy that we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, and the idea is that he said, well, you know, there's lots and lots of great produce out there now. Tell us about something that you've been doing with good stuff from your garden or from the farmer's market. And particularly, he said, you know, he is interested in new things. He's always looking for new things. And he said, well, you know, maybe there's something that you've just discovered. Maybe this is just a new recipe.
Like pizza bianca.
Like that. And, you know, Bianca, you say, come over, bring your pizza, and we'll have some.
And we'll talk.
All right. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Did you have another recipe?
I can go on with recipes. Yes, I did another one, which it's one of those things like, haven't you made coleslaw for years? Yes, I have. And I keep losing track of my mother's recipe for the sauce that she put on the coleslaw, because it was one of those alchemical things that she would do, and I can never bring myself to, I just can't bring myself to do it. But I sat there and watched her do that a lot, which is adding vinegar to cream, and it didn't curdle. And I don't know how she did that, but anyway, that's another part of it. So I've left that part of coleslaw aside. But I've come up with a new coleslaw, which is another one of those things like, I never thought of putting that in or that in or that in. And so what it is shredded cabbage and half a cup of toasted almonds, sliced. The sliced almonds, not the chunk slivers, yeah, mm-hmm. Sliced almonds that you might toast just a little bit, and dried cranberries, and then a cup of celery, which it gives another level of crunch to all of that, and chopped green onions and green bell pepper. That seems like an awful lot to put in a coleslaw, but oh boy. Then the dressing was really easy. I like it. It's a half a cup of mayonnaise and a tablespoon of sweet pickle relish, and some honey mustard, and some honey. So it's going to be a little sweeter, and then with those cranberries in it, it's going to have a good flavor. And I made that, just a couple of weeks ago, and I was stunned at how good it was. I didn't share that with anybody. I ate all of that myself. But What a nice combination of almonds and cranberries and celery and green onions and bell pepper, as well as the cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that. I hadn't made it in a long, long time. And a couple of years ago, I made coleslaw. And I think that I was using basically, I was working with a Craig Claiborne recipe.
Yes.
That had mayonnaise and lemon juice. Your pairing of your creaminess and your acid. And I put it together. I thought it was not bad. But I also was thinking I would like to have a little sweet note in it. And then I remembered my mother. She used to put raisins her coleslaw. And I thought, oh, okay. And I put in some raisins. Or maybe you put in currants. I had something like that. And I thought, okay, now there you got something there. I like that. And I suppose some people might think, well, that's odd putting raisins or currants in.
No, there's a salad that was made with shredded carrots and raisins. Very specifically, shredded carrots and raisins, and so it would add the same. You know, during the war, we used raisins as a meat substitute. Ground them up with other things, and maybe added peanut butter, and that was a fake meat sandwich. In the seventh grade.
Good work. All right. Let's talk with somebody else here. We have a caller in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You just mentioned lemon juice, and I just remembered that my mother used to make a dressing that she would toss with the lettuce in the summer, usually with blue cheese and lemon juice, and I'm not sure if she used any oil or not. Unfortunately, I don't have the recipe, but it just made a very light coating on the lettuce, and if you like blue cheese, it was delicious.
Was the blue cheese just crumbled, or was it mixed in with the lemon juice?
It was mixed in.
So did it kind of become creamy?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I'm not sure if she used oil with it or not. I know she didn't use any vinegar. I know she used lemon juice.
It was lemon juice.
And the blue cheese and maybe some oil, and it would just...
I think maybe a little bit of oil, because that's why I ask if you made it up into a creamy sauce. I don't think you could mash the cheese down enough for it to become creamy with just only the lemon juice.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think a little bit of oil.
Probably, but... Unfortunately, she never wrote it down. She's been gone some time.
Well, we have to try to remember those things, don't we?
Yep.
I like that. Blue cheese and lemon juice. Good.
Yeah, and probably some oil. And I can remember these plastic, clear plastic salad fork and spoon. And
oh, yes.
She would pour the lemon juice and I think probably oil in there too, kind of use that as a measuring spoon.
Uh-huh.
And then mix it all together, and then she would throw in the lettuce or whatever she was doing.
And only had one dirty knife and fork, and you're going to use it anyway. That's good.
And then I have a request, and then I have a recipe.
Yes.
And the request is that when you put the stuff up on the web, which I know you will do, David, that Doyle, you contribute your recipe for quick raised yeast dough.
Oh, well, all right. I'll go get that and make sure we have it. It's new to me, but it certainly does work.
That's all right. A mixture of the new and the old is great.
Right.
And then my mother was Swiss, and so we had a lot of things that were typically Swiss. And one of the things that... Well, raspberries grow everywhere in Switzerland, but we would have this with raspberries or strawberries, even blueberries, although blueberries coagulate a little bit. But she would cut up the fruit and then put the sugar on it and let it draw out the juice, and then she would pour buttermilk over it and mix it up so you had this wonderful pink soup. And
was that then served chilled?
Yes.
Yeah, the buttermilk.
Room temperature.
A cold fruit soup.
Right.
Yes, yes.
Right. My, we called it strawberry stuff when I was raising my kids because I don't remember that she ever gave it a name. She just called it, you know, berries and buttermilk. And, you know, I tell people about this and how delicious it is, and they'll say, well, I don't really like buttermilk. But you don't need to like buttermilk to like this.
Isn't that true? I mean, there are a lot of people who just... The idea of buttermilk turns them off.
But it gets all mixed up color-wise,
yes,
and taste-wise with the fruit, and it is just divine.
I'm trying to think, what is the Danes make a cold fruit soup, and there was a special name for that. Root.
Which would be red.
For
right?
Red, yeah. And it seemed like it was cool. Rude cool.
Oh.
Something like that.
Cool red.
Yeah. Cool red, I think. You're absolutely right.
I don't remember that she ever actually named it. I mean, there are other things that she would give the German name, and then, like, there's an apple or any tart fruit bread pudding with custard, and that goes by the name of Auflauf in Germany, in German, which means casserole, basically.
Oh, uh-huh.
But she called it Apple Brown Betty, but it's not really what Americans call Apple Brown
Betty.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
But I don't remember any name for this, but try it. It's great. All right.
That'll be it.
All right.
For the show.
Thank you.
Bye. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. It's our monthly cooking show. We do it on the first Wednesday every month at the 10 o'clock hour with Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. It's
chef
a purely honorary title. And as I have often said, there's nothing reticent about this man here. And he selects some topic. We've talked about different sorts of things, particular ingredients and dishes and things that you associate with particular times of the year. And this time around, he said, well, there's lots and lots of good fresh produce around. Let's talk about what people are doing with that, particularly if it's something that is new to you, something you've just found out is a good thing. And you could tell us about it, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. At any point here, you give us a call, and we have time to talk with some more folks.
Good.
I don't know.
I have another recipe.
Well, you could give another recipe.
Because this is another new whole thing. I'm impressed with the fashion now of having that ribbed grill in the house instead of
the grill pan.
Yes, the grill pan.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I've come across a lot of recipes for potatoes that are grilled on top of that and used as a potato salad. And I'm anxious to try that. I haven't tried it, but it's in my repertory of the next thing to try. And what you and then with these beautiful Yukon Golds that we get, I'm fond of using the tiny baby Dutch ones, potatoes, and maybe boiling them quickly and cutting them in half. But if you're going to grill them, take the big Yukon Golds and cut them about a fourth of an inch thick, and toss them with some vegetable oil and grill seasoning and rosemary, and then grill them to about 4 or 5 minutes on each side, which isn't very long. That's only about 8 minutes to have the potatoes already done. Meanwhile, you're going to add to that some navel oranges that you peel and chop up, and small red onion. So the orange and then the juice that comes from that, and the orange and the red onion, and then get some arugula, which I always think has a very, very weird smell, except it tastes so good, but I think it smells very skunky. Arugula, but it tastes so good. I just say, okay, so it's something new that you did not grow up with. You just face it. So arugula, and then these potatoes that you have grilled, and oranges and red onion, and then just a little bit of red wine vinegar. There isn't a lot of sauce on this because the orange juice mixes in with that, and 2 tablespoons of red vinegar is about all. And then you toss that up. I'm rather excited to try that, because as soon as I can get me some grilled potatoes, I'm going to do that. And I found about 3 recipes for grilled potatoes all at once. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it to turn on the television and everyone's cooking the same thing that day. I don't know how they manage to do that, but it makes me laugh. I'm sitting there laughing to myself. Well, okay, so now we'll listen to you talk about this.
I guess maybe somebody comes up with an idea and somebody else sees them and they think, oh, that sounds like a good thing. And then other people see that person and say, well, that sounds like a good thing. And pretty.
I think
soon as
everyone's
doing
it. Yes, but that's the way we get these things infused around.
Well, I like this idea of using a something like a potato, but that in a way where it's though prepared in a different way.
Yes, yes.
And it makes me think about this is something completely different. But I only did this one time, and I thought it was very good. Though it was a vegetable soup that was made with roasted vegetables, where you roast the vegetables first.
Oh yes,
and then you have they're cooked, and then you have a kind of a stock, and then you put them into the soup, and you don't want to cook that too long because you know you don't want them to come apart.
Fall apart.
But then what you get is you get the flavor of the roasted vegetables in the soup, which is a different sort of you don't really expect that,
it's an additive, really good. Yeah,
it's really good.
I'm very partial to roasted vegetables. I don't think we've checked into that enough, but I did not ever think of going ahead and making a soup of them. I've done the roasted vegetables. There's a Greek recipe for roast vegetables, which is just exotic. I was just stunned by it. I took some Greek cooking classes. Oh goodness. 30 years ago, and I haven't forgotten the experience of making that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is smart. You don't have to do anything. You chop them up, throw them into a pan, and all you do is just kind of watch them.
Yeah, olive oil.
A little olive oil. And this particular technique used tomato juice. You sprinkled a lot of tomato juice over it. And that has always been in the back of my mind as a rather exotic thing, but it was olive oil and tomato juice, and then they're all roasted. And I've done roasted. And the English use roast potatoes a lot, you know, along with the meat dish. And I like roasted potatoes, but there are so many other vegetables that are so good to do.
I think you can almost do just about. Well, you certainly do all the root vegetables.
Yes, all the root vegetables.
But there are other things that I have had roasted. You can roast asparagus.
Oh yes,
that's pretty good. I'm not sure what. Certainly, things like potatoes and beets and carrots and parsnips and rutabagas
and all those sorts of things. I just had a rutabaga day before yesterday. Yeah.
So, well, I don't know. Maybe it's this fall when it gets really cold and we're okay with turning on the oven. We should talk a little bit about roasting vegetables.
Yeah, we can do that. That'll be it.
We have somebody here on a cell phone on our line 4, the toll-free line, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
My husband makes a vegetable soup, and he uses V8 instead of tomato juice, and it's much richer.
Oh, yes.
Here's the thing. He wants to know, he's asking me, what is a roux? R-O-U-X.
A roux.
Yes, please tell.
And speaking of New Orleans and Gustave and everything, that's one of the major places where a roux comes from. It is a ritualistic. I mean, it's not simple. It's a ritualistic.
What?
It is very. You have to pay attention to it, and it is the use of flour and oil. And you then start cooking that together as though you're going to make a thickening for pan gravy. Well, that really is what you're making. But you keep cooking it and cooking it and cooking it and stirring it over and over and over. It takes a long time to do, and it wants to get it. And then there are various times that you can stop. Like, well, you can stop right at the beginning, and it would work to make something thick. And then you start at a very light. A light caramel tan, and then nut brown, and then almost the color of a brick. And you have to get it down to the point that if you don't pay attention to it, you're going to burn it the next second, you know. And so you have to be right there at the right second. And I remember a story. of going to visit a person that I did not know. I was with other people, but it was a doctor's wife in Baton Rouge, and we went over to see her, and we were late, and she came to the door with her iron skillet in one hand and pancake turner in the other, and she says, "I hope you didn't make me ruin my roux." She was rather furious that we had not been there on time, but she would not stop turning, brought to the door. And I've laughed at that because that's how serious the making of roux is. You'll find it in any of the major recipes dealing with gumbo, because it's the way it's the way you start making a gumbo is that dark, dark, dark brown roux. But it does take time, and you do have to concentrate on it. Except it is an absolute necessity. But I hope that answers your question.
I think it calls for too much patience for my husband, but it sounds
no, like no. Make him do it.
I will.
Get you a recipe so that you'll know. I mean, I don't know of too many other things that would start out with a dark brown roux. Maybe a pan, maybe a brown pan gravy, but with on pork roast or something like that. But
boy, that sounds good.
Well, I think that would do it. But you make it. That's what it is. R O U X.
That sounds like something you'd do on a cold winter afternoon for a big Sunday supper. That sounds good to me.
Well, that's it. But it'll start your gumbo. It'll work.
Well, thanks a lot.
You
fellas.
Bet.
That takes care of everything.
All right.
For me.
Well, thank you. And that's it is one of its functions is as a thickener.
A thickener, yes.
But it's more than that. It contributes a kind of a toasty,
a nutty brown
sort of nutty
taste.
Flavor. Yeah.
Because you're really cooking the flour, and it would end up like a lot of our bread crusts and things that have a nice flavor to them because they're cooked for a long time, mm-hmm. and the flour cooked that way. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what it is. I'm not sure where the roux came from. I think it probably would have been the French influence, although gumbo is an African influence in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
Because that's the word gumbo is what is the African word for okra.
Yeah,
and so that's where that came from. A lot of things came together at that point.
Right. Well, I guess we're gonna have to finish up for this time around.
Oh, the old clock on the wall.
That's right. So please do if you can, if you're within the range of WILL TV. Join us Monday night, September 8th, 7 p.m. for picnics, potlucks, and tailgates, the live show. We're going to show you how to make some stuff. We'll have viewers and listeners on to show us their recipes. We put it together into a little book. You can get that, and we hope that you'll support WILL when you
and
do
I'll
that.
Have my little blue apron on.
He'll have his little blue apron on. We'll have a good time. Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
The man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He's with us every month, always on the first Wednesday, and we talk about cooking. These shows, by the way, are made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Wacky Nackies, Prairie Fire Glass, Be Active Toys, and Any Frequency Music, all housed on the same street in downtown Monticello. When China's first emperor died in 210 BC, he was buried in an enormous mausoleum together with more than 8,000 life-size figures of warriors and horses. That chamber was discovered in 1974 by farmers that were digging a well. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, you'll hear the story of Qin Shi Huang and the Terracotta Army. Celeste Quinn talks with historian and travel writer John Mann. That's in the 1 o'clock hour of the show. So hope you can tune in for that. In the next hour, we'll be talking about nanotechnology on the U of I campus. First, though, we'll take a break, as we usually do, so we can bring you an update on the markets and news. So please stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're at mid-session. September corn and November beans have fallen to two-week lows on spillover weakness from crude oil, a firm dollar, and forecasts for rain in the U.S. Midwest at midweek. We're also seeing some technical selling accelerating the November bean contract to the downside as it has dropped below Tuesday's session low as well. Let's go ahead and look at the particulars. In Kansas City, December wheat at 8.11, down a quarter. at the Board of Trade. September wheat, 744 and a quarter, unchanged. December, 769, up 2 and a quarter. March, 792, up 1 and a quarter. September corn, 537 and a quarter, down 15 and three quarters. December, 533 and a half, down 15 and three quarters. March, 572, down 16. May, 583 and a half, down 16 and three quarters. September beans, not trading. November, 1244, down 54 and a half. January, 1263, down 52 and a half. March, 1302, down 25 and three quarters. September soybean meal, 353.50, down 11.40. September soybean oil, 50.25, down 178. October live cattle, 103.60, down 15. September feeders,